Michael Avery with Classic Business.
Well, the man with the view from the market tonight is Liston Mainchies of Invest. And Liston, we ended the day down 1.32%. It's about 750-odd points down on the day. That was something of a recovery. It did look like it might be worse. And this was all triggered, really, on Friday when we saw that dreaded yield curve inversion. And so far, it's been a pretty good indicator of recessions in the U.S. How are you doing?
Oh, well, hi there, Michael. Greetings to the listeners. Yeah, I think we're living in very interesting times. And I did send you a bit about Bloomberg. And, you know, they had, I think, four contrasting headlines, one below each other. I didn't even have to adjust them. And they said the best existing home sales in 3 years. Growth fears, hit the bond market and the shares carry on up. And I say, well, you can take your pick, you know, flip a coin. I think you can flip four coins here. There are as many opinions as there are people. But no, so I think, you know, we've got to take a longer-term view on nearly all of this. And most certainly, the Fed came out with a very dovish story. And there have been enough indications, you know, that things are not running well, not necessarily in the States, but in Europe particularly. A lot of the PMIs, the purchasing managers indices, came out looking poor. Mm. And generally, you know, the sentiment has got negative. In South Africa, we didn't have to try hard to get negative sentiment. You know,
Eskom we're priced for junk already.
Eskom did that for us. And I mean, we had a Sunday without any load shedding. It was amazing.
It must mean the ratings agencies are coming to town.
Something like that.
Now, you look at, and in jest, you sent me that that Bloomberg snapshot of the four contrasting articles. It's very difficult for investors to make head or tails of this at the moment, but that yield curve inversion has been a pretty reliable indicator of recessions in the US. The problem is, sometimes it can take a quarter or two, sometimes it can take up to 4 to 8 quarters. So timing this becomes a bit of a fool's game.
Well, again, you know, if we had higher valuations, I would be far more concerned. And so you really have to look where the high valuations are. But I think I've mentioned his name before, but Ed Yardini is the person, is my go-to man in the United States. Now, I've been seeing Ed on TV probably since the early 80s when he was the economist at Prudential. I mean, got to go a long way back to get that. And he always impressed me by what I say he does the work. And he does most of it himself. So he's not talking from somebody else's, piece together bits. But what he does do is he looks at each company and he then says, well, you know, where can they go and where can they grow and how can they grow? And as a result, he works out what the index can do. Now, most people say, oh, well, the index is going to do 5%. You know, that's in terms of earnings growth. He is much more methodical about the whole thing. So that's why he's my go-to man. And he writes a mean article and you can get it on the web if you look up Ed Yardini. And he does have a subscription service, but he has quite a lot free too.
Yeah, and what is he saying?
And he is saying, well, there just isn't much earnings growth to come outside of the energy companies. And as you know, the energy companies went through that torrid time when we had the low oil price. Then we went up to whatever it was, 70 or just shy of that last year, back to 50. And in fact, if you look at the oil price, it's something like 35% up so far this year.
Yeah.
That's only because of the very low base at the end of the last year on.
The statistics so, lies
you know,
and
damn
statistics.
When you say it.
Yeah. But it's so true. A similar thing happened in the commodity complex post the last super cycle. We saw companies basing predictions on record high commodity prices only to see those commodity prices fall out of bed. And there was a lot of restructuring, a lot of hiving off of so-called non-core assets, cleaning up of balance sheets. And so when the cycle turns again, these companies are lean and mean and really poised to harvest growth. And a similar phenomenon can be seen in the energy sector at the moment. Perhaps slightly opposite in the tech sector, where we've seen a lot of spending and perhaps on some questionable acquisitions as well. I know Apple's big announcement is going to be coming up a little bit later on. But before we get to that, a bit of geopolitics as well. Trump, Trump, has he been exonerated following the release? Well, it's not of the Mueller report, lest we forget. This is Trump's attorney general who released the report. So this is still third hand, but it does seem to exonerate Trump on the Russian influence side of things.
Well, I think, there's a certain set of processes. And when you have an investigation such as the Mueller done and set up by the attorney general, he has the right to decide how much the public should get or not get. And in his initial thing, he decided that there was, a precy would be good while he studied a bit further. And I'm confident the entire report will be released to the public because he fairly well said that, but he just said, he was going to take a bit of time before it got, the total thing came out. And I think much as most of us thought, there was not enough evidence of certain things, but certainly he was able to say quite strongly that Trump was not involved in any manipulation of the voting that may or may not have come from Russia. So I'm pleased. I mean, you asked me, I think, a week ago when we thought the Mueller report would come out. And lo and behold, it's already out, and it doesn't say anything too damning. Of course, the Democrat media are rather saying, there's lots more to answer for and whatever, and we will, without a doubt, there will still be attacks.
Yeah, clearly that plays into U.S. politics, but it does seem to strengthen the Tangerine Man's hand ahead of that 2020 election. I'm sure he's going to...
Very quickly on Brexit, yet another... slice in the saga, and essentially, I say it's down to the wire now, and what they've said is it's the EU deal or no deal. I don't know why they keep calling it May's deal. She dealt with the EU, and that's the agreement between the two of them, and she representing Britain, but the EU have said it's that deal or no deal. Take your pick. And unfortunately, some people still think there's a third choice. I do not know what it is.
Now, I also haven't seen a third way, to be frank, but we have had that delay, as we correctly speculated on the show a couple of weeks ago. Talk to me about NASPAS and what's going on here, because if you look at it, it's truly the poster child for the world's modern global tech company. South Africa born, Dutch run, with Chinese and Russian tech assets, amongst others, now moving part of those global assets to reduce that gap between the company's market value, somewhere around 1.4 trillion, and its Tencent stake, which is worth $133 billion alone, so well in excess of that. What does this mean for shareholders?
Well, again, that nothing is really changing except the jurisdiction. That's on phase one. They're not telling us too much about phase two, but certainly it does separate the one set of assets which a number of people come to South Africa to get. So I think one of the side spins is that they will no longer have to buy Rand to buy Naspers with. They will buy Euros to buy the NewCo with. Just for those who haven't heard, the story is all of the international companies are going to be put under one roof in a company called NewCo, listed in Amsterdam. You have to ask why Amsterdam, and the answer is they have a dual structure and they're keeping that dual structure in the NewCo, and you would not get that past some of the bigger exchanges, if I can put it that way, in Europe. But again, by their size, they will be a huge player, and they will make it into a number of Euro indices, if not the DAX, and if not the FTSE.
Now, what does that mean for traders? That's an entirely different question, because Naspers is the JSE's whale. It makes up almost, not quite a quarter, but maybe a fifth of the daily trading volume, doesn't it?
Well, it's about a fifth of most of the indices, and certainly more in the industrials, which is why I say the industrials index is a meaningless index these days. But no, so... what it means is that many people coming in and doing their volume here will no longer see that volume. So that's quite important to stock exchange brokers and the like, I would think. So the next point is that Naspers is still going to hold 76% or thereabouts of this new co. Now, somewhere along the line, they say, well, this is going to reduce Naspers's position in terms of size in the index. Well, that will only happen if they get rid of some of that stock. Otherwise, it's adding into their value. We may still give it a discount in the Naspers, but the point is people can deal in the NewCo on that side.
Now, do you expect to see a migration from Naspers into the NewCo, as those really are the prime asset?
Well, again, as you said, some investors will have the choice. and prefer NewCo, but that allows for the fact that if 76% of NewCo is owned by Naspers, where are they going to get the stock from? The other 25, are they just going to play the game, swap and hold? Mm. That isn't made plain. So I fully suspect that they will be prepared to sell down that stake, and they will, you know, one way or the other, the money will stay in NewCo, or in some way they're saying that NewCo will retain its cash. But obviously, if there's a sale from South Africa, then it will bring euros, or the euros will be sold and, you know, brought into the country. So it's quite a complicated story, but actually nothing has changed. At the in phase one, you're simply going to have your jurisdiction differ. That's all. We hope that there will be more people wanting it and not having to buy rands, not running the rand risk. They will go to NewCo.
It's happened where we've lost large volumes in the AB InBev transaction. We haven't really recovered those lost volumes. So it's unlikely that, based on that historical precedent, we're likely to recover the lost volumes from this transaction.
Well, again, I think it's quite curious as to exactly who owns what and how they're going to do it. And AB InBev, remember, was completely a cash offer. You got cash and you could decide to buy Anheuser-Busch. It wasn't as though they offered you shares in exchange, except for the PIC, who said they were going to take Anheuser-Busch no matter what happened. I'm not sure that was a good decision, by the way.
Well, judging by what's going on at the PIC, there have been so many questionable investment decisions taken there. I do note that Tito Mboweni was quoted on a very popular radio station yesterday saying that he's going to be announcing the new board sometime over the next week, as well as the new head of SARS, amongst other pearlers. Like, why do we have to have state-owned companies? Does the state make a good custodian or steward or manager of assets? Well, I think we all know the answer to that one.
But
listen,
he said that in the budget, so that's, he's continuing the song.
It's the same drum that he's been banging for some time. Listen, Mainchi's portfolio manager at Invest Securities, with your view from the markets, let's find out now what's happening out on the roads with Pusaletso.